Five, four, three, two, one. I'm John Miglosh for the WDMA, and we got the old logo up there, but I'll figure that out some other day. And, boy, you know, I haven't been doing these as often, and it takes me now hours to get one produced, whereas I used to do them in like 15 minutes a day, as you could probably tell. But I hope you give it a like, and I hope LinkedIn will give it some impressions. They keep falling off no matter what I try, so I've given up on even checking on it. My little surveys get thousands of impressions, and they take about 10 minutes. So that's, you know, a great advantage. It looks like I'm having shaky transmissions already. Oh, well, we'll get into it. So I'm waiting for it to go up again. Yeah, it looks like it's up. Okay, so let's get over to Tom Fishburne. Anecdotes and data. According to the data, that idea will never work. What data? Anecdotes we've been telling ourselves for years. Absolutely right. Boy, is that ever true. Okay, and Tom goes on. There's a well-known aphorism that the plural of anecdote is not data. Anecdote is not the same as antidote. Antidote is against poisons, and an anecdote is a little expression. Okay, so I found it interesting to learn that the origin of that line, here's a link to the origin, was actually the opposite. The Ray Wolfinger, and in the late 60s, a Cal professor and political scientist named Ray Wolfinger heard a student dismiss a statement as just an anecdote and responded, "The plural of anecdote is data," which is a brilliant thing to say. Both expressions are catchy and both ring true for me. And that is the biggest answer. And one of the things I like about Tom's comments all the time. Making decisions in business often involves weighing imperfect and sometimes contradictory information. You see, fundamentally, we're trying to predict the future. We're trying to guess if that slight trend this month in unemployment data means a recession is coming, or means a big boom is coming, or inflation, or whatever. All data is historical. There's no real-time data, no matter what anybody says. All data is historical, and so does not tell you the unfulfilled future. And so consequently, we always have imperfect data. No matter what you hear from the data people or whatever you hear from the marketing gurus about predictive modeling, it's nonsense. It's all historical modeling that we hope correlates to the future, right? We'll get to that in a minute. Okay, so at the end of one end of the spectrum, we often give too much credit to institutional folklore. These often take the form of anecdotes we tell ourselves to represent our categories, our customer personas. That's one of my favorites, customer personas. The biggest benefit of multivariate modeling, you know, throwing 200 or 300 variables at the wall, the biggest benefit of that is that you actually can spot anomalies. You can spot the weird stuff. So people are baking less. Why would Arm & Hammer baking soda be selling more? Well, it turned out people found out that you could put it in your refrigerator for deodorant. And now that was, of course, years and years and years ago. It was an anomaly. It was an anecdote, right? It wasn't the main use for baking soda. Baking soda is for baking. Anybody knows that. And yet, people use it for deodorant. Now you can get underarm deodorant, you know, which I've used on a few occasions. You can get deodorant for your laundry detergent. I used to use it for my hunting outfits so that the deer couldn't smell me, because they smell better than they can see. They can smell better than that. Anyway, so one of the greatest benefits of modeling, just And it's being completely lost because everyone's hiring free AI to do their modeling that does not tell you what the variables are. You have to have some old school modeling techniques, which we have, But no one ever really wanted to know that. So, you know, but because of the hands-on character of it, I was able to spot things. I was able to spot anomalies. Like, we had a business-to-business client that did the best in low-income urban areas. I'd never seen that before. And it turned out that it was because they were selling to large teaching hospitals, which were located there, that the items they were selling really had fallen out of favor with normal hospitals. Patients were getting that service outsourced in little clinics and it was just dying off. And so their main market was large urban hospitals. Fascinating. Changed the way they marketed. Had another client that sold dog grooming to professional dog groomers. Think Best of Show movie with John Candy. Excellent movie if you haven't seen it. It's hilarious. And our first model spotted that. But the second model in the springtime saw a complete 180 flip where the best places, the best customer areas were in low income, low population density, low education, low dwelling value. Everything was low. And we couldn't figure it out. I thought the thing was broken for a week or so. I had the developers and stuff looking into whether our system was completely wrong. And B2B, after all. And it turned out that in the spring, regular dog owners just get the burrs clipped off their dogs. That breakthrough grew that company 20% in a market that had not been growing. And it grew 20% the next year and 20% the next year. It grew so much that, of course, they didn't need us anymore, they thought. But they did hire us back years and years later. Anyway, when the growth stopped after that. Do you see what I'm saying? Anecdotes can be very valuable. They can also be totally wrong. But the great part about direct marketing is we can then test and evaluate those surprises which are available to complex marketers who keep the hands-on aspect of it. Okay, so ultimately we need both, and we also need humility in data. And that's what I like about Tom. Okay, Jim Barksdale, founder of CEO, once remarked, if we have data, let's look at data. If we have opinions, let's go with mine. Okay. But it's very difficult to get real data because, as I said, you're making decisions about the future, but you're looking at the past. I'll pretend this data I found is reliable, and you pretend to pay any attention to it. We found this correlation in the data. Everyone take a razor. Sales and shaved heads. Which brings me to my conclusion. You can go look at the rest of this stuff. I used to go to a website called Spurious Correlations. Now when I search that, I get tylervegan.com/spurious-correlations. I don't know if that's related to the old site, but this looks much like it. But it has a few new features, although it's missing some of my favorite old ones. Here's a correlation between GMO use in corn grown in Michigan. Went up and now it's kind of leveled off or gone down a little bit. It's gone down quite a bit. And also the number of registered Yamaha motorcycles in the UK. So this is 15 years of data with a 0.84 p-value, which is astounding. One is a perfect correlation. So this is almost a perfect correlation, as you can see from the graph. Doesn't make any sense at all, but on the new site, you can get an AI made-up explanation. As GMO corn in Michigan grew taller, it started emitting a frequency that strangely resonated with dormant Yamaha motorcycle engines in the UK, prompting a surge in registrations as they inexplicably revved to life. This unforeseen connection has left both farmers and bikers scratching their heads, but also secretly enjoying the unexpected collaboration between agriculture and the open road. And so here they show a cornfield with bikers going down the road, which shows you what AI can come up with. and why you should be using more carefully done modeling. Happy to talk. Give me a call. Join the WDMA, and you can call in for nothing for free. Okay, now let's get over to Mark Ritson. I saw this post on LinkedIn. His editor, Russell Parson, gets credit for this because he was going to the he was already at the International Festival of Creativity, and so Mark did a column on what you can learn from that festival, and but here's his article. My comprehensive guide to what marketers can learn this week. Now, before I go any further, I'm going to mess this up. So I actually got a Google, or I Googled up the pronunciation for that word. So let's listen to it, and we'll know how to pronounce it.
Can.
You got that?
Can.
I hope you got that. This is
what
from,
is the correct pronunciation
from,
of can?
Oops. Of cans, and they said it too in the next one. So Mark, I hope you got that. That's the English pronunciation of cans. The Cannes Film Festival. It's in the cans. And but back to the story. I did actually listen to about a dozen of these, and it's pronounced by the French. Cannes. With a little E at the end, but very soft. Cannes, like that. That's the right way. But cons is the way English people say it. So go for it. Either way you like. You know, we don't pronounce Wien. We pronounce Vienna. And why we do, I don't know. But when you're in Vienna, they pronounce it Wien. Or Wien, or something like that. Anyway, language is great. Just a little fun. But if you let AI pronounce your words for you, that's what you deserve. So someone pointed out that he'd not actually been to Cannes, so he could not criticize Cannes. I waved him away, but he had a point. So then a global multinational with a suitcase of cash and round-the-world first-class airfare invited him to come and speak. I want to hear that talk. I'll tell you that. And he's going to talk. So in 2 weeks, he'll be speaking at Cannes about the perils of overstating the power of creativity. I can't wait. I can't wait. I hope we can get access to that. And anyway, that was just too funny. I had to talk about that. We'll see how it comes out. Okay. Bob Bly. One more little piece here. What are the characteristics that make copy effective? Why does one ad make a lasting impression and sell merchandise while another falls flat and doesn't generate enough revenue to even pay its own cost? That's ad spend versus revenue, which is not measurement of ROI, by the way. It's not return on investment. It's return on ad spend, which doesn't fit. It's revenue versus ad spend. Anyway, virtually all persuasive copy contains 8 elements. Gains attention, right? So if you suffer from hemorrhoids, read this ad. That's how David A. Ogilvy describes gaining attention, with the headline that focuses attention on people who might want your product. One of the most important things, especially in mass advertising, focuses on the customer. This is notoriously difficult, if you don't do direct marketing, to find out who the customer is. Stresses benefits. I wish Bob writes these little emails. I wish he'd give examples of this. Differentiates you from your competitor or your competition and proves its case, establishes credibility, builds value, and closes with a call to action. And those are really good. And, you know, this would be a great checklist to just evaluate if your copy does these things. I'm not sure it has to do all of them. It depends on how much room you've got, right? But the illustration was, let's suppose that you're AT&T or T-Mobile. You have a long track record of success and a well-established reputation. Therefore, you will be naturally strong in elements 5 and 6, proving your case and establishing your credibility. Right? And, you know, basically, if I were going to write that copy, I would think about it like, is your cheap internet letting you down? You know, like, can you hear me now? That the old campaign, but I can't hear you now would be what I would change it to, because half the time it is that. You know, especially when we take our telephones and run them through our car Bluetooth and we drive under power lines and it's, you know, breaking up half the time. Okay, a new telephone company, on the other hand, might want to focus on differentiating features, like it's a lot less expensive, right? Benefit our service, differentiating. $15 a month, that's the Mint Mobile. That's the Mint Mobile one. This is my Mint. I have a collection of Mint Mobile. You know, they get less and less fun as T-Mobile takes them over, but they have kept my plan, so I have a $15 a month plan, and it works great. So each, and this is an important part, each product or service has natural strengths and weaknesses, you know, and your greatest strength will also be your unguarded weakness and vice versa. So sometimes by leaning into weaknesses, you can actually make the case that you're working on it. Like Avis used to say, we try harder. We're number two. We try harder, right? But all eight, the strengths are emphasized and the weaknesses de-emphasized and vice versa. Like Yogi Berra famously said, great pitching always beats great hitting, and vice versa. All eight elements must be present to some degree or the ad won't work. Okay, and then there's an offer from Bob for his book. Okay, that's enough for today. Like and share. Your friends will know you're smart. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.